Radio.
This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to The Whisker Report. We're a new podcast dedicated to helping anyone in the pet industry, whether you're in animal welfare or a for-profit pet company. We want to help you get some PR and buzz for your nonprofit or business. Hello, everyone. I'm Mary Tan, one of the hosts of the show, along with my buddy, Alexandre Ricard, a French gal who now lives in Vancouver, lives all over the world, speaks multiple languages, and is in always admiration of anyone who spays and neuters stray cats. Bonjour, Alexandre.
Bonjour, tout le monde. I'm excited for this show. You guys will see we have a really, really incredible guest. But right now, we're here with our producer, Mark Winter of Pet Life Radio, who is the man who gets us to you each and every week. Hey, Mark.
Hi, how's everyone doing?
We are good.
I'm excited for Christmas. I made something called like salt dough to make ornaments.
Never heard of that salt.
I have.
It's fun.
Yeah, maybe we used to do that in like elementary school.
Yes, probably. You did it in elementary school.
Yeah, so we mix salt and flour and a bit of water, and then it's like a cookie dough. And then
I remember doing that.
You make shape and you cook them for hours, and then now they're hard, so we can paint them. So I'm excited.
Oh, you need to make a Pet Life Radio one.
Ooh, I can do that.
You should. And speaking of holidays, our show from last week, our holiday episode, is now posted and available for everyone to listen to.
Yay! And don't forget, we also have 24 days of giveaways on our social media.
Yes, and Mark sings. He has a beautiful voice, and he has a Christmas album out.
So just a single.
Oh, Mark, I made my roommate listen to it and she loved it. She said it was really good. So
good. Thank you.
Yes. Mark is a man of many, many talents. And of course, lots of great shows coming out. And we're so honored to be part of the Pet Life Radio Network because you know what? You could do PR for yourself. And Alex, Mark, and I are going to help you each and every week.
So today's show is with one of my favorite person in the whole world, a person who inspires me to do better every day and who I admire. Adele Goodman, the superwoman behind the Instagram account Travel Animal Rescue, is originally from the US, but she's been traveling and rescuing animals all over the world. I did meet her in Greece last year, and that is where she's currently based, trapping, neutering, and returning cats every single day. Hi, Adele. I'm so grateful you're on our show today.
Oh, that's really sweet. And also, I am your biggest fan as well. I didn't realize you're my biggest fan also. So cute.
We're sharing the same. Can you tell us a bit about your story and how did you start traveling and rescuing animals?
Sure. Well, I lived in the US for, 24 some years. Maybe like you, Alex, and many other people. I got kind of fed up of not being able to do anything like meaningful and felt like, I just kind of had to get out and see what I could do in other places. So I just kind of picked a spot on the map. It happened to be Cambodia. And like many people, about a week or two after being abroad, I found two kittens in the street, brought them home. And that's basically the rest of the story. From there, when you start noticing animals, you just kind of constantly start noticing animals, their conditions, and it's really easy to feel compelled to want to do something, but not really know what to do. A lot of people, your instinct is to get into rescue. And that brought me to Vietnam shortly after, where I, for the first time, worked in rescue. I had some experience working in farm sanctuaries in the US before, but I had never been like fully enshrined in rescue. So in the countryside in Vietnam, working in rescue, it's pretty wild, unlike anything I've ever experienced. And very quickly after working in this facility with all these animals, trying to help my community animals, I realized a lot of it can be pretty futile if there's no system in place for actually preventing all these animals being in need of rescue. There's just so much need around you all the time, and there's just so little resources, even veterinary resources, to rely on. So you get really frustrated. And pretty soon I realized the only big impact I'm going to be able to have on animal conditions around me is if I'm involved in prevention rather than rescue. So from there, it was around COVID time when I was in Vietnam and I decided to leave after a while. From there, I kind of just bounced around different places and tried to kidnap cats off the street, get them neutered, give them parasite treatment, treat their any wounds or infections they had, put them back better. And one by one turned into a pretty large scale, full-time thing. And now we're here neutering as many cats as possible.
That's so impressive. Oh my gosh. Can I ask you a question? I've always wanted to ask people that just get up and go. So how do you prepare for that? Like financially, how are you funding all the surgeries? How are you funding, you know, how you live? Like it does cost money to do what you do.
Right. So I didn't have a plan in the beginning, to be honest. I thought I'll just set out and teach English as a very global north privileged minded person would say, I'll just go teach kids English in another country. And I realized I'm not good at that. So I somehow managed to, and I can't give you any advice on how to do this because I don't know if it existed as a job before. I somehow managed to get work with lots of small, local, grassroots animal rescue and protection organizations as kind of like an operations manager. So every organization needs help with administration, communications, fundraising, marketing, recruitment, facilities management, veterinary management, all of these things. However, a lot of rescues are just a person who set out to help and are doing all of it on their own. And it's incredibly overwhelming. So these people who have a ton of work to do, which is essential in order to do the work, have this burden on their shoulders and very little money to employ other people to do. Somehow I found organizations who realized after many years of doing all of this on their own, they needed to hire somebody to help them. So that's what I've been doing the past few years in order to survive, is working for small, like multiple small organizations that are engaged in rescue or neutering, what have you. And that has kind of made rescue my full-time, all-time thing, which has its positives and negatives, but that's how I've been able to survive. I don't know how to replicate that. Please don't ask me because I've got so many jobs doing it.
Yeah. And today you also have got a full-time job as an actual trapper.
Right. So once again, no idea how that
happened.
But after kind of practicing on my own in all of these different countries, meeting all these different organizations, like Alex's organization and some of our mutual friends. Yeah, just neutering on my own, trapping on my own. A local organization I had been a volunteer for received the ability to do a large-scale project neutering like 1,000 to 1,500 cats a year, which meant they needed full-time people on staff. So that's what I've done for the past year. It's been kind of one of the main people in the field doing trapping basically every single day for 8 hours, every day.
So yeah, it's an actual job now to be a full-time trapper, which is like what we need. We need more of them because, you know, there are full times of being a, you know, a shelter manager or an adoption shelter manager or whatever, but no trapper. So this is a new job and I'm all for it.
That is so cool. Adele, I have a quick question. I feel like when I was overseas, most of the trappers and the rescuers were either from Western European countries or the US or Canada, like a lot from the UK and the US. Is that what you find too?
It depends on where you are. I would say in Southeast Asia, yes. But here in Greece, I think every community, every neighborhood that I've lived in Greece, there are local people who have been trying to do neutering on their own for many years. A lot of them are older. A lot of them are women. We know rescue is dominated by non-men. And they've been out here doing it like one by one. And that means depending on like the neighborhood you live in, not every neighborhood, of course, but a lot of places I've been able to move in and someone is already locally neutering some of the cats. And then that gives me an opportunity to step in and be like, maybe I can help you. Maybe I can connect you to vets who are going to offer lower cost sterilizations and also are a bit better quality. And we can help triage some things to get better care for the cats, like better pain relief or maybe provide equipment to people that couldn't access it before. That's something that Alex is really familiar with, kind of helping bridge those gaps. Because there's a lot of people that want to do it. They just really struggle to get the resources to do it because this stuff can be really expensive. And it's not a social system the way that it should be.
I feel like, though, in Greece, it's getting better. Am I right? I mean, compared to other countries. Now, I don't live there, but I had this conversation with, when I was leaving Greece, I had a conversation with the ticketing guy at the airport with, I forget which airline. Oh, I think it was like with KLM. And the guy was telling me he's Greek. He saw all these kitties on Instagram. And he's like, I want to get a kitty like that and put him on Instagram. And so he took a cat into his house and he lives in, it's a multi-generational situation. So his grandparents were horrified that he took this outdoor cat and made him his pet. But now this pet sleeps with him. And he said with his friends, he finds that that's coming. But I suppose you're out on the street. So you can, it's just like, you know, everybody could take 10 cats into their house.
Sure. I think some things are getting better. It is a slow progression. You're always going to have people who disagree with certain interventions. But luckily, they're not typically the ones who are taking care of the animals at all. So you can always, what I like to do if someone disagrees with what I'm doing or is not particularly helpful, if they come over and start questioning me, I just ask them if they want to donate and they run away so fast, might be able to solve the problem. Yeah, I think there are tons of substantial higher volume spay and neuter projects that are popping up. Just perhaps in Greece, it can seem like it's such an uphill battle because there are so many animals on the street already. And if you remember, you probably experienced that it was a bit different for cats and dogs. Dogs, they have dealt with a bit differently. Alex, correct me if I'm wrong in any part, but weren't really put through any kind of neutering program. They were sort of like rounded up and put in shelters. So you won't see community dogs in the same way here. However, with cats who can very easily hide in the many, many abandoned buildings behind fences and so on, perhaps that sort of saved them from the sort of like mass entrapment or culling style and has enabled more people to get involved in neutering, which, as we all know, is a much more effective way of controlling free roaming animals populations. So I do think things are getting better in some ways, but there are still, I mean, where Alex was, there was no neutering going on, right? No. You guys started a whole project there. So some places are untouched and some places there's concentration of work.
Yeah, because we have to say that Adele is based in Athens, the capital of Greece as well. So it's a bit different from my experience, which was in the countryside, small right. Greek town.
Well, cool. Well, coming up, we're going to talk with Adele about social media and PR and how she does it. And she's going to ask us questions, too, on how she can get more publicity for her rescue. So we'll be right back.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back with Adele from Travel Animal Rescue. So, Adele, I checked your Instagram account yesterday, and if I'm right, you have around 25,000 followers.
sounds about right.
Yeah. So one of the questions is, you know, so many pet people have smaller rescues and they always say how hard it is to, you know, get high engagement or even get followers. And we also know that getting more followers might mean more donations sometimes because you have access to a bigger audience than if you only have like 1,000 people following you. So I just wanted to ask you, how did you grow your audience and how important is social media for you?
Well, I wish I could give you some kind of like magic method of how it worked, but I gotta tell you, it was a complete accident. And I wanted to ask you as well, because we all hear so much talk about different kinds of like tactics and pleasing the algorithm and things that we can do. You know, the music for this reel has been used a lot. Maybe somebody will click on my reel because they used the song or something. I don't know. But honestly, I had a very small account until I posted one video of me using a dropper to catch a cat. It was a few seconds long. It was a small text over it that said, we're doing TNR, it's good for this reason. And it got millions of views and all of these followers that honestly, they're probably mostly bots. I hate to break it to us, but like they're probably mostly spam accounts. Because if you ask a lot of people who have really large followings, the people who actually engage with the content is so much lower than the people that follow them. I hear a lot of people in fundraising talk about if every person who followed me donated a dollar or 50 cents, we would be okay. Why doesn't that happen? Because I think so many people are not actually engaging with our account. I have a friend with a sanctuary here in Moktada. She has, I don't know, 45,000 followers and she has about 1,000 people that watch her stories every day. 1,000 out of 45,000 people. And that's actually pretty good. So what I would say is I find a lot more value in connecting with people genuinely who are directly related to the work that I do, or there's some overlap, or we have some interests in common, whether it's animal rights work of different types of projects, or different types of animals, or prevention work, or a wide variety of things, people who work in veterinary, people who work in different countries. I find that to be a lot more growthful. Those people engage a lot more than, you know, the perhaps like 25,000 random people that chose to follow me at one point and then never really engaged with it again. I don't know if you have a bit of a different experience or can lend some insight into that.
So for me, it was kind of the same story as you, right? We had a couple of followers and then one day created a video about Faith, a paralyzed kitty that started walking again and, you know, went completely viral, had like 50 million views and, you know, the Dodo called us and the newspaper called us and it was absolutely insane. And we got like 50,000 followers overnight. And I think for us now, what we see a year later is that the people that followed us, some of them was for a good reason. They wanted to see our work. Some of them was just to see Faith. And so once Faith was adopted, our engagement dropped because, well, Faith was not with us anymore. So, you know, so what we need to do, especially when we do TNR, and, you know, TNR is not, you know, joyful, happy story. You know, it's not a cute kitty cat getting adopted. It's just a cute kitty cat getting spayed and then returning to its colony. So we have to try to grab the attention with one specific cat. That's why I feel like works. I've been following a couple of TNR accounts. And what they do is really create a relationship with a specific stray cat and then show that relationship and show, you know, give update of that stray cat. So I feel like people just really need an attachment. And that's how, like, you know, pet influencer works so well, because if you see, you know, like surfer cat Mavi, people are attached to Mavi, his story, what he's doing himself. They don't really care about his parents. They just want Mavi the cat, or like Bowie, the Siberian cat. You know, it's like they just get attached to one cat, one animal. So that's kind of what you need to do, is try to like find a special story, which is hard for us when we, you know, we only have stray cats, or we have one cat that we're trying to put for adoption, but only lasts a few months and then, you know, the cat is gone. So it's a hard balance.
Right. Maybe this also ties into your second question, which is what I use my account for is kind of just to convey like why I'm actually tangibly experiencing, and maybe talk about some topics that are real but a bit difficult to broach, and maybe less talked about topics, or maybe controversial topics, things that that people are hesitant to discuss, to instigate conversation. But the reason why I can do that is because I don't use my account for fundraising whatsoever. I didn't start it for fundraising. I don't ask family or friends for money. And I am in a super position in order to do that because I decided to register my organization as a charity simply in order to apply for larger grants and funds so that I didn't have to beg people for money and prove the value of what I was doing every day. Because at the end of the day, like, fundraising and marketing and rescue is us trying to demonstrate that we're providing value, we're doing work that is really important, and it can be really frustrating to try to do a good job at that and not receive the support that you need.
Yeah.
So I have the ability to not rely on my social media for fundraising purposes and talk about other types of things and you do what I said before, which is like meaningfully engage with people in conversation that are directly related to what I do, rather than trying to get new followers and bring in money that way.
That's one thing, Mary, I wanted to ask you about. So Adele, I know you're quite a big activist on social media. You will talk about, you know, controversial subject when they're not, you know, like, for example, being vegan or like politics and stuff like that. And you're saying because you're not fundraising money. But for example, Mary, for us as Saving Lives, we're trying to, you know, fundraise money. So we don't share as much about being vegan because we're trying to fundraise money to TNR. And so, you know, it's two different topics. Is it controversial to, like, how as a charity we're trying to fundraise, how political or how controversial can you actually be on social media?
So that's a great question, Alex. I would say talking about vegan is actually fine. I mean, people don't get bent out of shape over what you eat. And I've never seen any vegan websites. I haven't seen people turn away from that because it's a choice. And especially if you're trying to hit Americans, I think being a vegan shows your compassion. Now, the people who are not going to like that is the beef industry, the big factory farms. Yeah, they're not going to like that. But you know what? They're not your target audience. They are never, ever going to support animal welfare. Where I do draw the line, and because I come from government and I have worked at animal rescues and shelters that have taken political stances, I would stay away from politics. I have seen some animal welfare groups, you know, post one way or the other, and then you're alienating the other party, right? And you know, this is individual, but if you're trying to get the most money out of people, I would stay neutral. And here's the thing, especially in the U.S., all political parties love animals. They just maybe support it a different way. Because I have seen research that says Republicans donate more to animal rescue than do Democrats. But on the other hand, and you know, it depends. I mean, if you don't want any of your money to come from one side or the other, I would say post what you want. It's up to you as the leader of the group. But just in terms of animals are, as we say, bipartisan. I mean, animals do bring people together. And so regardless of, I personally prefer a more neutral stance because I'm just looking to raise as much money as possible. But I do feel when it comes to veganism, it's a compassion issue. And I feel like that's a little bit different. I mean, I have never heard of anybody, and I may be wrong, but I have not heard anybody say, I don't like you because you're a vegan.
Oh, I've heard it.
I've never heard that. Now, have you?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I get a lot of backlash sometimes. And what I used to get when we did TNR, and even from my own family, was, I don't get it. You're vegan, but you feed cats sardines to catch them. Like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, well, you know, I've got to do it. Like, it's really hard. Like, even I have a cat and I'm feeding my cat meat, right? My cat is not vegan. So it's a very hard conscious choice, but people will find that to not be within your values. So they will try to attack you on that. That's what I've personally seen. So that's why we've always been, we talk a bit about veganism, but we talk more about the food rather than being like actual activists on our social media, which we would love to be more. But it's also like a case of like, if we do that, are we going to lose followers? And are we going to lose, you know, people who donate just money for the cats? So it's a bit difficult in that way.
So I remember when I was working with Sterling Davis, he posted something political and he lost, I can't remember what he told me, but he lost like 20,000 followers overnight. And so, you know what? I wonder if that's more, what I'm saying is more geared towards Americans, because this is my philosophy. Americans hate being told what to do. And so in America, it's all about choices. But I remember when I talked to this French guy in Los Angeles, and I told him I needed a sandwich to get for you at CatCon. And I'm like, it's got to be vegan. He looked at me like, this is a girl from France and she's a vegan? Yeah. And he was shocked because he said, French people don't care for veganism, is what I'm told. You know what, though? In the end, it's up to you as the executive director and founder to do what's in your heart and mission. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of getting as much money as you can from everybody. Yeah. But if you're really, really strong about one area, then yeah, absolutely post about it. Because the other side of this coin, Adele, is that if you don't stand for something, then like you're going to get lost in the fray, right? When you're putting out a message, when you're putting out your story, it's got to be unique to you. So I'm kind of talking from both ends of my mouth, but you need to make a statement. But at the same time, I would say in the US and what I've noticed in the United States is people go down. I'm sure it happens in other countries, but since I'm in the US, I feel like people go down rabbit holes. Like you post something political, then you're spending all the time talking about this politics and stuff that has nothing to do with cats. And then all of a sudden you're spending your time dealing with this. And so that's why, you know, you just gotta be prepared for what you do. And also never shut off your comments. That's another big. I had a crisis. I have a situation right now where one of the owners shut off the comments on her page because something terrible happened. And I completely disagree because that also gives you a chance for your supporters to defend.
Yeah,
to
that's true.
Defend themselves. Now, if you are a vegan nonprofit and you are championing veganism, then absolutely go all out too. You know, I mean, it depends what your mission is. And I would say most animal welfare and animal welfare advocates, almost everybody's vegan. And that's very well known. No, I'm done. I'm like chatting up a storm here.
Mary talks a lot.
Yes, I have a big mouth. I apologize.
The first grant I ever received was from an animal rights vegan-focused organization for TNR. When I registered my charity in the UK, in my charity objects, I presented it as a TNR-focused animal rights project because I have an animal rights background. I've worked with all species of animals. I work for everyone equally. The reason I do TNR for cats is not because I have an affinity for cats, but because they're in front of me and I can. Like that's the need that I can fill with my skills. And so for me, this is an animal rights issue because we do for anybody who is unfamiliar, we do spay and neuter for their well-being. And to people who are unfamiliar or people who come from a very strict abolitionist animal rights perspective may not understand that because some people can think, well, why is this necessary? Or why are you violating their consent of like removing organs from their body? It can seem like quite a non-animal rights focused thing. And I actually did a whole presentation about this summer in an animal liberation conference in Copenhagen to specifically talk to animal liberation folk about why I feel this is an animal rights issue. Specifically to the point of, we do this for them. Sometimes when we rescue, we do it for ourselves. It makes us feel good. Yes, of course, we often do it for them, but there is a part that makes us feel good as well, right? We get that animal up the street and into a warm bed, a shelter, a home, whatever. But when we do an intervention like sterilization, we oftentimes don't benefit from it other than seeing them well after, and we sacrifice a lot in order to do it. It's not a nice thing for them to go through. It's not a great thing for us to go through either. It's very expensive, stressful. There's a lot of factors that come into play. I view it as the crux between life and death for that animal because we're enhancing their life, their medical conditions, their health status in so many ways. And if we don't, the alternative is grave. So because it is for their well-being and we're doing it because we want to help them, that's why I view it as an animal rights issue. And so I wanted to broach that topic to that community. That's why I also talk about it to larger community on social media or whatever. When I say talking about politics, I don't mean electoral politics. That's why I left the US. I'll say it's far away from that possible. It's one of the worst things about America. Okay. I talk about life being political, especially in local communities in Greece, for example, this very specific issue. People harm animals intentionally. They don't want animals. People harm animals intentionally everywhere and all species. But specifically, there is a prevalence of, in my local community right now, people harming animals intentionally. And when we try to prevent this very objectionable thing from happening, everyone, most people in society would agree, like, this is not something that should happen. Like, animals should be looked after. No one should be intentionally harmed. That's why we have animal welfare laws in place. So when you simply try to uphold the laws that exist and you see police interventions and court interventions that don't actually punish the perpetrators, and you go there and you see with your eyes these people being let back out into society, you will see how political this is. You will see how connected these two things are. And so I don't talk about my views on different political topics. I share the reality of what happens in animal rescue and how it connects to communities, societies. At the end of the day, like, when we intervene in free roaming animals' lives, we're sort of disrupting a system that has come together over many years of animals that were domesticated and then discarded, right? Like, these animals were allowed at the minimum to be brought into this world and sometimes purposely brought into this world and then discarded. I see that as a violent thing because they meet violence on the streets. They suffer greatly, and that's why we do TNR. And so when we intervene, when we try to help them, it may seem as simple as like, oh, we're just trying to help animals, or we're just trying to make cats' lives better. But I see us as disrupting the system that can be very violent and is upheld by so many different parts of society. So that's why I feel a lot of these kinds of things can end up seeming quite political. But again, I don't rely on the average person to donate to me. So I am in a bit of a different situation than others who do. And there are a lot of people who don't have the privilege to speak out against certain things because it will cost them support, which is a shame.
Right. We have to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk more about telling the story of TNR.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand only from Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We're back with Adele. And Adele, a couple of days ago, you contacted me and we chatted about a huge project you are working on. And I'd like to hear more about that. We only have a couple more minutes on the podcast, but please tell us more. And I think you have some PR questions.
Yeah, I mean, like anybody else, I would love to soak up whatever knowledge you have about getting lots and lots of money to do this work that so few people seem to see as important as rescuing kittens. I know a lot of people who use kitten rescue to fundraise and then divert that money to spay and neuter because it's just less attractive, maybe, to larger society. So, yeah, I mean, there's nothing like concrete yet, but I have a few people in my life who are really passionate about prevention, specifically spay and neuter, and have been working in rescue for many years in a part of Greece, and really want to see spay and neuter work be effective to help the cats in the community, but also to sort of experiment and see if we do enough population management for cats, does it have a markable effect on the local rescues? We talk about that a lot here in the US, where if we're doing spay and neuter, we are alleviating a lot of the burden from the local rescues. You have to constantly take in kitten. In Greece, yes, of course, you have to take in kittens and sick animals here and there, but there's always too many. And so they are always overburdened. So I'd love to see a project that is at the intersection of community-focused spay and neuter, but also analyzing some kind of benefit on the local rescues and seeing if that spay and neuter work is also alleviating the burden on the maybe one or two rescues that exist on an entire island. How to market something like that? How to make something like that consumable to people in order to get support and for them to understand the need for it?
So you know how you were talking about how you approach your social media and you're looking for stories? That is, it's the exact same thing with public relations and media relations. And so one thing I would do is you need to reach out to the local media in whatever country you're in. One thing that is standard with all countries is everybody has local community media. There has to be a place that people are getting their information from, you know, and that could be like getting on the BBC, which is seen worldwide, or getting on CNN or Sky News or any of these outlets. And you need to be telling your story. And here's the thing, like, in my view, you're right. Actually trapping cats and getting them spayed and neutered and releasing them back into the colonies is actually not all that exciting to most people. But what is exciting, and I hate to say this, but in the U.S., and I think the Western European media too, fear and loathing and terrible things gets more eyeballs. And so what I would suggest is you talk about what happens to all of these kittens and animals that are born as strays and ferals. What happens to them? What is their life like? Show these impoverished animals. Show exactly what is going on to these animals. When you see injured, I mean, Alex, you do this really well, bringing in injured animals and telling their stories. And you know what? I don't think it has to be an adoptable animal for them to tell the story. I mean, if it's an animal that you're rehabilitating that was kicked on the streets in Athens, that's a very compelling story. And, you know, I'm sure millions of other cats are going through the same thing in Greece.
Yeah, maybe you could find some numbers of, like, I don't know if that's possible, right? Because it's hard to find numbers, but on that Greek island, maybe see how many cats get run over or how many kittens are born each year, or, you know, just like some stories from the locals. Like, I'm sure they've seen horrifying stories about a cat that died because of a dog or something, you know, like just like some really compelling stories. And I think because a lot of people love Greece and they love the cats in Greece, right? It's a well-known fact, like Greek cats in Greece, you can definitely get like international coverage to be like, everybody loves to come to Greece on holiday. Everybody loves to come to Santorini and see those healthy cats. But if you go to another island, what is happening? This is what's happening. And this is how we're planning on solving it. This is the problem. This is our solution.
Exactly. And you know what? You should hit up the wealthier countries. I happen to know two people here in Minnesota that were vacationing in Greece and just took two kittens home with them. It's actually pretty easy, but yeah, people have big hearts. I would, you know, focus on the wealthier European countries and that sort of thing. And it is possible. There's a lot, I'm going to say, especially in the US and the UK, there's a lot of money in animal welfare. And there's people out there that would love to see what you're doing, but you need to get in front of these people. And that's the hardest part. If that makes any sense.
I mean, that was one of my questions. Having been throughout a lot of parts of the global south, I know tons of rescues and everyone is asking for the same thing. And I don't know if anyone knows quite how to reach the global north, how to reach an international audience. In Greece, for example, local media can talk about animal welfare, but there is just so much need here that the local support. I mean, there's a reason why most cats go for adoption abroad.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
People are just overwhelmed with it here. So what would you say to organizations in the global south who want to take advantage of wealthier communities who do care about animal welfare and want to engage them in this storytelling and stand out from all of the just endless stories of need that we hear all around the world?
You know, one thing that the most successful rescues that I have worked with, doesn't matter what country you're in, is making initial contact with them in terms of getting to know them. So, you know, here in the US, they have, like, for example, the Lions Group or the American Legions here in the United States. They all are these community groups. And like, I've given presentations about the rescue that I'm working with or the shelter. And then I find that they're donating. I'll leave the meeting with $2,500. Is there a way for you to get in front of, get into the community groups of the local Greek communities that, you know, are maybe in a wealthier area? Or another thing is perhaps you contact the American Embassy in Athens and ask them, hey, could I come give a presentation about what I'm doing? Because those are all Americans who are living overseas, right? And they're based in Greece, or even going to the U.S. military bases there. They all have community groups because they all, you know, they're all Americans living together. That's just one way. But every community has like a community group of some sort. And if you can get in front of these groups and talk about what you're doing and explain what you're doing and explain and, have a PowerPoint with visuals of some of the animals you help and why they need to get involved, I think that's a way. Now, there is a situation, and I don't know, you might be an introverted as well. A lot of animal welfare people are introverted, and so they're a little bit scared. You know, they don't like public speaking. But maybe if there's somebody, if you're talking to a Greek community group, you can find them. Maybe have somebody who's a volunteer with you that is Greek that could deliver the presentation. It's, you know, it's getting out and also meeting with the mayors of the town. Because in the end, from what I understand, like in Greece, I mean, and in third world countries, government is very important to most of the people. I think, you know, in the U.S., they don't like their government. But I feel like in other countries, they like their government a little better because, you know, you get health insurance and everything through their government. So people are a little bit more dependent on their government than they are in the U.S. So these are just some ideas, Adele. I'm throwing a lot at you, but getting out there, you've got to have a unique story. And, you know, so many animal rescues tell me, we don't have anything. We're just doing what everybody else is doing. No, you're not. You're an individual. You're a separate person. You are what makes your group unique. And you have such an amazing story, Adele. Like, you've lived in so many countries doing animal rescue. I can tell you, there's people that I know and people in the U.S. that would just be so fascinated on that, you know, and even to people overseas. And I could see you being featured on the Dodo and the Huffington Post and all of these groups. And so you've got to get your story out there. And just remember that you're a true individual and your story is unique. Your story, even though you and Alex have kind of done similar things, you're both very different, right? Mm-hmm. You both have a different approach to things. So there, that's my coaching segment for you.
Thank you. I mean, to your point, as a person whose biggest fear is public speaking in a world where there are so many more important things to be afraid of, to be honest, that's something that I have been fortunate to not have to do and have really tried not to, is like be focused in my media. I do also do that for a purpose. I don't see myself as the work, right? And I want to be careful, especially as a Global North person with privilege coming to the Global South and centering myself. So I try to center the communities and the collaborative work. But also there are many people who have success by being the face of an organization, being the face of the work. We've even heard social media algorithms like to see a human face. So yeah, I definitely don't do that very much. I prefer the more stealth approach where you don't see me very often. Maybe you see my back cloaked in black with my hat hiding.
Yeah.
Hitting my face. But yeah, I mean, to your point before, I've seen the reels that do really well being the ones that do tell stories. So I've done a few about the importance of pregnant space in spay and neuter, for example, where I've just had endless shots of sick kittens on the street showing the conditions that they live in, because this is the reality. It's not painting it in any sort of light. This is what we see every day. And those tend to do really well. it is a balance of trying not to overwhelm people with making them think it's just a futile, horrible situation and there's no point donating because, you know, it's not going to change anything. Like, to your point before, showing the impact, the direct impact of spay and neuter and all these other types of interventions is we prevent this thing that you're seeing right now from happening. Wouldn't that be great? And it's actually not so expensive. That's the nice thing about spay and neuter. You could save a cat's lives and all of their potential offspring for less than 50 euros. That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
All right. Well, we have had an action-packed segment, but I want to give you one parting advice, Adele. When you are out there public speaking and promoting yourself, you are not, like, you are not necessarily the story. Don't equate getting out there and talking about your rescue as just doing publicity for yourself. What you're doing is you're really helping your organization. I hope that makes sense. You know, when I do public speaking, think of public speaking as you are helping the cats that you're serving, because without you being the mouthpiece, your cats don't have a say, right? So don't always think about that I'm public speaking, so I'm bragging about myself. Also, the other thing I want to tell people, if you don't say nice things about yourself, nobody else is going to. And the cats need you, Adele, to speak out and talk on their behalf. You need to get out there and rescue and raise a lot of money to get your kitties fixed so they stop having babies. So there, that's my parting thought. And of course, that's a wrap for this show. We're so excited. We want to thank Adele for coming on, and we love doing this kind of work. We want to make life better for animals. And so also, if you have a question you want us to answer, reach out to us on our Instagram or Facebook page under The Whisker Report or Whisker Media, and we're going to try to answer it in a future podcast episode. So as we always say, bark loud and purr smart. See you, everybody.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.